Morning. Today's daf Nirchin is Chav Gimel. We are in the Mishnah on the top of Chav Gimel. Amud Aleph. Hamakdish nechasav aisa alav ksuvas isha. Person decides that him and his worldly possessions no longer need to be together. He's done with his worldly possessions. He has now committed himself to a life of total spirituality. And my worldly possessions I give to the Beis Hamikdash. Okay. And on top of that, he had ksuvas isha. He has a ksuva. In other words, he's a married man. Every married man's got a ksuva. And so that means that is a note. It's a note of indebtedness. And so like every note, so it is secured by property. The problem is that he took his property and he was makdish it. So he gave it to the Beis Hamikdash. So now, what's a possible concern? Possible concern could go as follows. He'll say to his wife as follows. I really thought that I could live the spiritual existence. With no worldly possessions, and I could, you know, and I could just subsist on God's goodness. Happens to be, Kadosh Baruch Hu is good, he's kulo tov, but it just happens to be that I also enjoyed the property that I once upon a time had, and it's gone. So, and I'd like it back, but I was makdish all my nechasim. So I have an idea. So right, him and
his. I mean, it's indebted to her. How could it be his?
How could it be his? No, it's no longer his. In other words, he was makdish.
How was it makdish? It's indebted to her from the day he got married.
She has a lien on the property.
So she can claim it from Hector?
Hold on. We're getting there. That's coming up. So anyway, so he says to her as follows. Look, I have an idea. Let's get divorced. Okay? Wait, just let me finish presenting. So let's get divorced. And so what's going to happen now is that once we get a divorce, so now you're entitled to collect your ksuva, you do have a lien on the property, and so now you'll be able to recover the property from Hektish because of your lien on the property. And then afterwards, once you recover the property, so then we'll get married again. Okay? In other words, so the only reason why we're going to get a divorce is so that we can recover the property. So, right? Good idea, right? So what the Mishnah says is that we're actually worried about people like that. And I know it's a little bit strange because really, if you think about it, what the collusion is the collusion's against Hektesh. And so you think about it like that somebody would go that far. And so the Mishnah says, yeah, we're worried about people like that. So what do we do? So the Mishnah goes on to say, now let's see the Mishnah inside. So Rebbe Lazar is of the opinion that when he divorces her, so he has to make a hanada. He has to make a neder. And the neder is effectively saying that I'm not going to remarry you again. Now, the strength of the neder we're going to be talking about in the course of the Gemara, because we know that nedarim are a little bit pliable, and you make a neder and you could go to a chacham and it can be matir the neder. So we're going to talk about the strength of the neder. But in the meantime, however, what the chachamim were worried about is this kind of collusion that I just described. And so therefore, when he divorces her, he's going to make a neder that he's not going to marry her again. And as a result of that, so we are trying to create some sort of preventative for this collusion to occur. Rabbi Yeshua, just give me a moment. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Einu Tzarech. And Rabbi Yeshua says it's not necessary. And as we're going to see in the Gemara, what Rabbi Yeshua is basically saying is, look, I know people scheme, and I know people do collude, but we're talking against Hektesh. In other words, people are not that nefarious as it relates to Hektesh, so Rabbi Yeshua says it's not necessary. And again, what I just said, we'll see clearly in the Gemara. Amar Shimon Gamliel Af Ha'ariv Le'isha B'ksuva Sa'vahaya Bala Megarsha. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, I'll add another scenario. Let's say Ariv Leisha, guarantor for a woman. Guarantor for a woman, meaning as follows. A woman is going to get married, and she's going to marry a man, but the man right now currently has nothing. And she says, look, I'd love to marry you, and I know you're going to write me a ksuva, but what good is the ksuva that you're going to write me if you don't have any property? You have nothing to secure the loan. So I'm interested, but I'm a little bit nervous. So he says, oh, no problem at all. So what I'll do is I'll get somebody to co-sign on the ksuva, a guarantor. So an Ariv Leisha, b'ksuva sa. And so once again, let's think about now how the scheming goes. So the husband says to the wife, look, I got nothing on me. What do we do? So, okay. And what's it called? Not an original thought now. In other words, same idea. So let's get divorced. Now, it's true that you have a ksuba against me, but I have nothing, which is why we're scheming in the first place. And so what you'll do is now somebody co-signed on the ksuba. So you'll go after now the Arif, and you collect the property from the Arif, and then we'll get remarried again. What a wonderful idea. A brilliant plan. So once again, over here now, So Yedirenu Hanasha Miyasa Kanunya on the Chasim Shozer V'Yachzer Zishto. So they're going to do some sort of kanunya, some sort of collusion over the property, like I just described. And so, and then he's going to just remarry his wife again. And now, lo and behold, look at that property. Oh, well, life is good. So in order to avoid that, in order to avoid such a scenario, so once again, so when they get a divorce, so a neder is going to be made by the man saying that he's not going to remarry this woman again. And again, to prevent such a collusion from occurring and extracting the land from the arev, from the guarantor. You'll notice over here in this Mishnah that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua is not arguing in this case. In the first case of the Mishnah, so Rabbi Yeshua says, it's not necessary. You don't have to make a neder. And in this case over here, Rabbi Yeshua remains silent. And why? Because, like I said, people do scheme. It's unfortunate, but in other words, it's done. And people, you know, especially when people are desperate, so they're going to do things in order to gain money and to gain property. So in the latter case of the Mishnah, we're talking about just it's a regular case. It's a guarantor. And okay, look, the guarantee, you know, we can rationalize in our head why it is that we're entitled to take that property away from the guarantor. But in the case of Hektish, what Rabbi Yeshua is effectively saying is people wouldn't do that with Hektish, meaning that's really chutzpah, where I'm going to collude and I'm going to collude against Hektish. So that's why Rabbi Yeshua argues in the first place, but not in the second case. Okay, yeah.
The nether can be annulled.
We'll get to that. The Gemara is going to address that. But my kemiflegim, Rabbi Elazar sever adam osi kenunya al hektish. Rabbi Yeshua sever inadam osi kenunya al hektish. Okay, so the Gemara says very succinctly that the debate in the Mishnah between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is to what degree do we suspect that people are going to make some sort of collusion against hektish. Rabbi Elazar says that we are worried that people are going to make a collusion against hektish. Rabbi Yeshua is not. So the Gemara says, let's consider the following. This is a memra of Rav Huna. You have somebody who is dying, and as he's dying, he's giving his last will and testament, and he's giving directions in terms of what should be done with his property. And he says, Hikdash kol nechasav, all my property should go to Hekdash. And Va'amar, and immediately afterwards he says, Manal ploni biadi, and he says, wait one second, let me just clarify. I know I said all my possessions, but you see that mana, that little purse of money? That's not mine. Meaning that belongs to somebody else. I just happen to have been holding it. So now he's clarifying, even though in this first direction, he said that that's going to go to Hektish, but in his clarification, he's now saying, but that money does not belong to me. So Naaman. So we, under those circumstances, we have full Naaman to say he's telling the truth. Because we generally presume that he's not going to do any kind of scheming against Hektish. And so therefore, even though the second statement comes after the first statement, and the first statement has now directed that to Hektish, but his clarification now removes it from Hektish, but his clarification is it never was mine to be Makdish in the first place. And Rav Huna says, and generally speaking, when it comes to Hektish, people don't play around, people don't play games. Now, Lema Kitanai, wait just one second, Lema Kitanai Amar L'Shmaite, so the Gemara says now, this statement of Rav Huna, you want to tell me now that this is subject to a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua? In other words, Rav Huna would not dip his toe in that water of a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. And meanwhile, he's saying it so flatly, so basically, as if everyone would agree to that. So the Gemara says, lo. And the Gemara says, no. Ad kan lo pligi ela bebari. So as far as Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua are concerned, they do argue about scheming against Hekdesh, but they're doing so about a person who is healthy. And when he does scheme, he could benefit from his scheming. But when it comes to a person who is dying, so why would he be scheming? Meaning, you're going to tell me now that he's scheming so that he can take money away from Hektish? He's dying, and he knows he's dying. Meaning, he's giving his last instructions, his final instructions. So, and the general rule is, Ein adam chotev alalo. A person does not sin when he himself has nothing to benefit from it, right? In other words, we certainly have a yetzara, but we're not anarchists. We don't just like to destroy for the sake of destruction. Meaning, the only reason why we would do such a thing is so that we could benefit. He's not going to benefit from it. So therefore, there's no scheming over here. So Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua would, Rav Huna would argue, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua would agree in his case. Okay. Igid Amri, in a slightly different version, Babar Dukalem lo pligi Adam Ose Kenunya Lahektesh. The Gemara now has a different version of how to understand the machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. A person, generally speaking, is suspected of scheming and even against Hekdesh. It's a really awful thing to think. But, okay, people are people. We all have a Yetzirah. So, v'hacha b'nedr shuhu d'barabim k'miflgi. What is at issue over here is strength of neder. Meaning that when we make a neder, so how much is that neder that the person is going to make going to be able to prevent such scheming? Mar sava yesh lo hafara, mar sava ein lo hafara. So if I make a neder and I do so publicly, so the machlokus over here between the Tanaim is to what degree we can be matir such a neder. One says that there is such a way to be matir such a neder, and the other one says there's not. Now, if you could be matir such a neder, so that means the neder would be ineffective. If it's an ineffective neder, so as much as we'd like the person to make a neder, but there's nothing we could do about it. On the other hand, if you hold that a neder shehuda barabim is ein lo hafara, now by the way, the word hafara is slightly imprecise, right? The hafara is for the language used for a husband abrogating the neder of his wife.
Harata.
So it's harat, it's hatara. So but fine, but okay, just a right, a small detail, but still the point is still the same. But if you subscribe to the idea that such a neder is a valid neder and unbreakable, so then we're going to have the person make such a neder. That's another way to explain the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Ibai Semantikulama Neder Shu Dabarab Yesh La Farah. The Gemara suggests now that a neder that was made publicly is, you are able to go to a chacham and have him release you from that neder. So the Gemara says what is subject to a debate is a neder that was made al das rabim. Now, what's the subtle difference between making a neder shehuda barabim, which was what we described just moments earlier, versus what we're saying right now, al das rabim? Al das rabim means that I'm not making it based on my intention and my thought process, but based on public on public intent. And public intent, obviously, now I lose control over it, and so therefore I can't release myself from such a neder. Now the Gemara says, "Vela hadamar amemer neder shuhud abirabim yesh lo afara al das rabim emein lo afara." So the Gemara says, if you're saying now that this issue of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is whether a neder made al das rabim is something that can be released from or you cannot be released from. So the Gemara says, I have a memra of amemer, and he says clearly that if it was a neder made publicly, so you can go to a chacham and get released from it. But if it's al das rabim, it's based on the public intent. Ein lo hafara, and he's saying it flatly. And again, lema ketanai amar l'shmaita. You want to tell me that it is subject to a machlokes tanaim? And meanwhile, he's saying it so calmly as if it's not a controversial statement. V'stu Rabbi Yeshua amar ein sarach einu moel mi baile. And on top of all this, if the entire debate in the Mishnah is the effectiveness of the neder, the language of the Mishnah is not good. The Mishnah's language is einu tsarach. He doesn't need to. That's Rabbi Yeshua's statement. And he doesn't need to. That's not really the best way to articulate the point of effectiveness or lack thereof. The way it should be says is eino mo'el. That's what the Mishnah should be saying. It wouldn't help if you make a neder. So ela hacha, so the Gemara says, okay, you're right. So over here, we're not debating the effectiveness of a neder. We know. A neder, a stam neder, can go to a chacham and can release you from it. Neder shehuda barabim, a neder made publicly, machlokis. Neder al das rabim, according to a memar, is a totally unbreakable neder. Once you do it with public intent. So at this point in time, we now know the effectiveness of the neder, and there is no debate in the Mishnah between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua in terms of the degree of neder and whether it can or cannot be broken and lifted. So the Gemara now is going to suggest another way to explain the machlokas in the Mishnah. So just quickly to recap. Right now, we have a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. When a person is makdish as nechasim and he has an outstanding ksuva, and are we worried that maybe him and his wife are going to divorce only just to be able to recover the land that was now in the possession of Hekdesh? And so in the Mishnah, we have Rabbi Elazar's shita is that we're worried, and therefore we have him making a neder. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, we're not worried. And so far we have on the table one explanation of the machlokas. The Gemara tried to give other explanations, but Gemara is unsatisfied. So far, we have one explanation, and it's a very straightforward one, which is Rabbi Elazar is worried that people will collude even against Hekdesh, and Rabbi Yeshua says, not for Hekdesh. I know people scheme, but not for Hekdesh, not with Hekdesh property. Well, the Gemara now is going to propose another way to explain the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, alahacha b'she'ela de Hekdesh kamiflgi. The Gemara suggests now that there's another way to explain the machlokas, and that's as follows. Let's say I declare something to belong to Hekdesh, and I made an error. In other words, it was a mistake. And so I declared it to be Hekdesh, but under a little bit of mistaken identity. So under those circumstances, can we go now, can I go to a chacham and say, look, I said it belongs to Hektesh, but I want to get out of it. So are you able to get out of it? And this is a basic machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Did I skip a little bit? I missed a word. Vehatanya, Rashi explains over here, Vehatanya over here is not a question, but benichusa, meaning this brace is going to support exactly what we're saying now. That the core of the debate between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua of our Mishnah is whether or not you can get out of a hektish betos. So good. So the Braisa starts off the same way our Mishnah does. Machlokas in terms of whether or not the husband, after he was makdish all of his possessions, he then turns to his wife and says, let's get a divorce so that we can recover the possessions. Is that something that we're concerned about? Rabbi Lazar says we are. Rabbi Yeshua says we're not. And meaning, or let me say clear, according to Rabbi Lazar, you do have to make a neder when you divorce your wife, so that we're not going to worry about such scheming. And Rabbi Yeshua says it's unnecessary. And in the Braisa, Rabbi Lazar matches it up with the words of Beit Shammai and the words of Beit Hillel. She Beit Shammai omrim hektesh tos hektesh, she Beit Hillel omrim hektesh tos enu hektesh. Where Beit Shammai says that if I makdish something but I do so mistakenly, it still is going to belong to Hekdesh, and according to Beit Hillel, it does not belong to Hekdesh. Meaning you can go to a Chacham and get it out of the hands of Hekdesh. Now let's plug this in. In other words, let's speak out exactly how these two machloksim line up one with another. Let's start off with the following. Let's subscribe to Beit Shammai's position. Hekdesh shows have a Hekdesh. I declared something to be belong to Hektesh. And then after realizing what I just did, I made a mistake. That's not what I wanted to go to Hektesh. I wanted something else to go to Hektesh. And so now, could I go to a Chacham and release it? So according to Beit Shammai, you can't. Now, it's interesting position in of itself. Like, why can't you? There's no way to get it back. We have a general rule of Nekach Taos. If we make a transaction and it's under some false pretense, so then the sale is going to be voided. So Beit Shammai's position that Hektesh Taos is valid and unrecoverable, it is in of itself a really interesting shita. But that is the shita of Beit Shammai. So once you start there, so now watch how the dominoes fall. So that means that once I declare something to belong to Hektesh, that's it. Even if I made a mistake, it now belongs to Hektesh. It's irreversible. Now what? Now I got to go to plan B because there's no plan A. So now I'm going to divorce my wife so that she has a lien against my property, so that she has a lien against the property that belongs to Hektesh. We'll recover the property, and so therefore we're going to be able to get back the property. That's all according to Beit Shammai. And that's why Rabbi Lazar in the Mishnah says that when he divorces his wife, he's got to make a neder because he's got no other avenue if he wants to try to recover his property from Hektesh. But you see, if you hold like Beis Hillel, which the Gemara now is suggesting Rabbi Yeshua does, now watch how the dominoes fall. So let's say he was makdish something and he made a mistake. We don't have to go through the process of divorce. Divorce is complicated. Even if we're doing so just for scheming purposes, it's still complicated. We don't have to go through that. We have a much simpler plan. It's not even a plan. Option A, I'll go to a chacham and I'll say, look, I was makdish this. I did so under error. All right? And I'd like to annul my hektesh. And according to Beis Hillel, you're allowed to do that. So therefore, when he divorces his wife, we're not worried about scheming, we're not worried about collusion, because he didn't need to go down that avenue. He had a much easier way of recovering that which he was makdish. Okay. The Gemara now presents that as another way of explaining the machlokes between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua. So, on the question of, when after you're makdish in a chasim, you divorce your wife, do you have to make a neder in order to prevent scheming? So Rabbi Lazar says you do, Rabbi Yeshua says you do not. And so what do we have in the Gemara right now? Two ways to explain the machlokes between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua. One, whether or not people are going to be scheming against Hektesh. People, unfortunately, do scheme under normal circumstances, but would they do so against Hektish? Rabbi Elazar says, yes, we're worried about that. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no. That's one possibility. Or the second possibility, which the Gemara just outlined, is that the Machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua is really predicated on the Machlokes of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Is a person allowed to recover Hektish when he was Makdish something B'taus? Beit Shammai says, no. Beit Hillel says, yes. And that will have a domino effect now on when he's divorcing his wife. Are we worried about him scheming? And that will be the machlokas of Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua. V'chein ha-yerushim and Gamliel Omer, Moshe bar Atzi arva dekalte hava. Gemara now tells the following story. Story is, Moshe bar Atzi was the arev, he was the guarantor, dekalte for his daughter-in-law's ksuva. Or to put it in other words, he was basically going to co-sign on his son's ksuva. Okay, and Hava v'Rav Huna bereid surba m'Rabbanan Hava. Now his son is Rav Huna, so this is now Rav Huna, the son of Moshe bar Atzri, and so now he knows that his father is co-signing on his ksuva. Udechigale milsa. Now he was a Talmud Chacham, and he also did not have money. And so Amar Abaye, so Abaye now is wondering out loud. You know what? Times for him is really tough. He's in financial straits. He needs some advice. So Leket de Nasri Eitzel le Ravuna le Deligrish le Devasayu. So I have the following suggestion, and that is as follows. Let him divorce his wife, Etisva Ksuva Same Avua, and now she'll demand a Ksuva from his father, Ula Hadre Mehadre, and then they can get remarried again. Now, why doesn't he just simply ask dad for some money? Okay, so apparently that wasn't an option. I can only guess in terms of why that wasn't an option. I'd rather not guess. So let's just say that wasn't an option. Okay, fine. So he'll divorce his wife. Then she's going to demand a ksuva. He's not in a position to pay the ksuva. The father co-signed on it. So therefore, the father now is going to be paying the ksuva with his property. And so now they'll get remarried again. And in the marriage now, lo and behold, they got property. Brilliant. What a great idea. So Amalei Rava V'hanan Yidor HaNatanan. So Rava says, brilliant idea. Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. The Chachamim already thought of that. And the Chachamim therefore require that when a man divorces his wife, he's going to be making a neder. If there is a guarantor on the ksuva, so a neder needs to be made in order to protect the guarantor. That's exactly what we learned in our Mishnah. Ha'ariv, our Mishnah says, Ha'ariv le'isha b'ksuva sa'a, v'haya bala megarsha yitirenu hana, shami yasa kenun yala nechasam shezev v'yachzer sishto. So of course it's a brilliant idea. It's also somewhat deceptive. It's also a little bit disingenuous. But with all that stated, the Chachamim thought of it. And the Chachamim said, you have to make a neder before you divorce her. So, by the way, it's not totally clear exactly when the neder is made. Before the divorce, before the collection of the ksuva. Whatever the case is, a neder is made in order to prevent the scheming from occurring. So, so Rava says to Abaye, what good is this advice? So, and the ethics of the advice we're going to get to in just a moment. The Abaye to call them Garish, Bebe Dina Megarish. Now Abaye, who still thinks that this advice is sound advice, so Abaye says, look, you don't have to get divorced in a Beis Din. Meaning the only time that a neder is going to be made is Beis Din is presiding over the case. Do divorces need to occur in a Beis Din? Now from this line of the Gemara, it seems pretty clear that when it comes to a divorce, it does not need to occur in a Beis Din. There is nowhere in Maseches Gittin, right? You talk about a really interesting point. Meaning, how is get done? So the husband hands a divorce document to his wife, right? V'nasam biyada. Now, even though it sounds really simple, so there are nine prakim in Gittin that discuss the exact details in terms of how this is done, and it's also contract law, so it gets detailed. It gets a little bit complicated. But to the basic question of does this have to be done in a Beis Din? So it is really unclear from the entire Masechta. Nowhere in the Masechta says that it has to be done in front of Beis Din. You need witnesses. That part's clear. You need Edim. But does it have to be done in front of a Beis Din? Unclear. From our Gemara, seems pretty clear it doesn't need to be done in front of a Beis Din. There has been a minhag now for hundreds of years where divorces are done in a Beis Din, in front of a Beis Din. And so if you've ever been at a get, so you'll know that the proceeding is done with Edim and with a Beis Din. And that's based on Chuvas of the Noda Behuda. But anyway, for our purposes right now, let's go back to the Gemara. Abaye says, look, you don't have to get divorced in front of a Beis Din. So in other words, I understand the Chachamim want you to make a neder when you divorce your wife, but somehow you can try to slip around that. L'sofik la'milsa de'kohen hava. And now, after all of Abaye and Rava's discussion over what this young Talmud Chacham should do, this young poor Talmud Chacham should do, so then it was discovered one really important detail, and that is that he was a Kohen. So now that he's a Kohen, so the entire discussion gets thrown right out the window. Because now what? He's going to divorce his wife, and they're going to get the property, and he's going to remarry her? She's now a Gerusha. He can't marry her. Okay, we're going to have to basically... new life advice in terms of how he's going to be able to come into money, but this one's not going to work. Amar Abaye Basar Aniya Azlan Yusa. Abaye now has a quip about what we just saw together, and that is, you know, that poverty seems to always follow the poor. Okay. Umi Amar Abaye Hachi. Now the Gemara is going to circle around in terms of the ethics. Meaning, okay, we were having really a strictly legal discussion in terms of the efficacy of divorcing your wife so that you can so we can recover property from the guarantor. And over here, the Gemara has discussed it strictly on the legal on legal grounds. But now we get to discuss the ethics of the situation. Meaning, it is disingenuous. Meaning, you're divorcing the woman only so that we can recover the ksuva, and then we're going to get remarried again. Like, that doesn't seem right from an ethical standpoint. And the Gemara now notes exactly this point. What's a cunning Rasha? You know, if you tell somebody that you could sell property like as per the advice of Shimon Gamliel, now that's not relevant to our discussion. It is relevant to our discussion, but the citation over here of Shimon Gamliel is actually related to another issue, and this is the Gemara in Ksivas. Gemara in Ksivas and Daf Tzadi Hey. I'm looking at the last Rashi on the Amud. Ha'omer b'shas misa, a person says at the time of his death, nichzai lach va'acharecha laploni. What we're going to do is we're basically going to create a trust of our estate, of my estate, where first you're going to be the recipient, and then afterwards they're going to designate a second recipient. V'yared harishon
ma,
huh? After you die. In other words, after you die, it's then going to go to Ploni. So there are going to be two designated recipients of the estate.
After the first recipient dies.
Yeah. V'yared harishon machar. So clearly now the intention of the person who's dying is that even though you're going to be receiving the estate, you really shouldn't sell the estate because I do want a second designee. I want a second person to actually receive it. I'm just saying that for the interim of the rest of your life, you can make usage of it. But he didn't say that. In other words, he said, first it's going to go to you and then it's going to go to a second designee. Huh? Life estate? I was asking before the daf. What is this? Okay, so leplon v'yared harishon machar v'achal. Rishim Gamliel omer ein l'sheni elamasha shi'ar harishon. So Rishim Gamliel says that the first designated recipient, even though the intent is he shouldn't sell it, but if he sells any of it and he consumes it, that's it. In other words, the second beneficiary doesn't get any of it. And if somebody now were to come over to the first designee, the first beneficiary, and say to him, you know, you really can't sell it. You know, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that there is an allowance to sell it. So you're advising, but it's a Russia. It's not good advice because that really isn't the true intent of the I'll say it like that. It wasn't really the true intent of the person who was passing on. And so therefore, if you do so, you're giving him correct advice. But it's not really ethical advice. Mm. So over here, it's exactly the same point. I'm going to divorce my wife so that I can recover the ksuva from my father, and then we're going to get remarried again. And lo and behold, look at that, we're going to come into property. Meaning, I understand from a legal standpoint, it works. Or does it? That was the discussion. But from an ethical standpoint, like, that's unethical. And that's what the Gemara is bothered by. So the Gemara says, you're right. You're right. Under normal circumstances, it is totally unethical. But the Gemara says, but over here, I could say that situationally, it's different. One, says the Gemara. It's a son. meaning that a father just generally has compassion towards his son. And we could talk about it from an emotional standpoint. We can even talk about it from a legal standpoint. Meaning, do you know what happens to the estate of the father after the father dies? It ends up going to the son. So anyway, I could see this going to the son anyway under other circumstances, i.e. death and Yerusha. So by virtue of the fact that the son now is going to be going through some sort of circuitous route in order to get the property, okay, but it's his son. And number two, he's a Talmid Chacham. And people, generally speaking, want to take care of Talmid Chachamim. So for these two reasons, and it's interesting, by the way, what if it's only one of the two reasons? But if for these two reasons, one can imagine that over here, the father would tacitly agree to such a venture. And again, by the way, it's just hard for me to understand all this. If the father's ready to agree to all that, so wouldn't the father also agree to help financially his son out? But okay. Let's continue in the Gemara. So Breishan Itzurbe Branashana. Tepuklei. So the Gemara says now, you notice that in this entire discussion that we had, and it really goes all the way back to the Mishnah, so we're saying that if somebody is a guarantor, so he's got to pay. Which generally speaking is true, meaning that's the whole point of being a guarantor. When you're co-signing on a loan, so that means to say that if the first line of defense, the first signer on the loan is incapable of paying the loan, so that's why you co-signed. So the Gemara now wants to know, does a co-signer of a ksuva have to pay? An arev of a ksuva. And what the Gemara now is going to say is, not always. Not always. So the arev of a typically the arev of a ksuva, lo mishtabed. So the Gemara says, now, do you know that an arev of a ksuva does not have to pay? For reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment. So the Gemara says, now we turn to the top of Chagimel Amid Beis, Kablan Hava. So the Gemara says, yeah, but he was a Kablan. Meaning that there are levels of arevas. There is a guarantor and, wait for it, a super guarantor. Okay. Get that here and only here. There are different levels of guarantor. Now, what is an arev versus an arev Kablan? So it's not totally clear. Meaning, we know that there are levels of guarantor. And we know that there's an arev and we know that there's an arev Kablan. It's not perfectly clear throughout the Gemaras exactly what the differentiation is. So some are of the opinion that the difference between them is as follows. An arev basically says, co-sign on the loan? Sure, no problem. And he sits there and he writes that he's going to guarantee the loan. Arev Kablan is where I, the arev, instruct the lender to lend money to the borrower based on me signing on it. So if I give now clear instructions, so that now brings us to the next level. That's one way to say the difference between a standard guarantor versus a arev Kablan or super guarantor. Anyway, by an arev Kablan, the Gemara now is arguing that he for sure is going to have to pay the ksuva in the event of the default of the husband. So arev Kablan hava hanich lamandamer Kablan afagav deleis lenechasim lelov v'mishtabed. Elamandamer islei mishtabed leislei lamishtabed ma'ikel ameimar. So the Gemara says, even by an arev Kablan, if, let's say, for example, when the man got married and he's looking for somebody to co-sign on his ksuva, and at that point in time, he had no money. And I'm standing there and I'm saying, you know what? Go for it. Go get married. Don't worry. And, oh, you want me to become a super guarantor? I'll become a super guarantor. I'll become an Arev Kablan. Some are of the opinion that even under those circumstances, he's not really co-signing on the loan. He's not committing himself to really serve as a guarantor for the loan. And the reason why, if you think about it, is because, and again, the Gemara is going to articulate this. What I'm saying right now is coming up. But I'll give it away right now. In other words, when it comes to a standard loan, where I'm going to be co-signing on the loan, so there, I'm co-signing because I'm going to be serving as the second line of recovery. However, when it comes to marriage, what real damage am I doing by marriage? In other words, in fact, just the opposite. I'm encouraging two people to get married. Getting married is a mitzvah. It's a good thing to be married. He's got no money. Don't worry about it. Right? You want a little more safety and security in that? Okay, I'm there. But in other words, I'm not doing it really to serve as financial backing. What I'm really doing is I'm just encouraging the marriage to occur. And if the man who's getting married has no money, and you really think that I came along in order to secure that obligation, what I came along to do is just simply encourage the two to get married. Right? They were scared to, you know, to take the next step. Okay, so good. So I pushed them in order to take the next step. But I didn't do so really to commit myself financially. I just did it to encourage the two people to get married. Okay, good. That is the reason why the Gemara is suggesting right now that if the husband who's getting married has no money and I'm coming along and serving as an Arif, and even if I'm serving as an Arif Kaplan, a super guarantor, it's not going to, it doesn't mean that I'm really financially committing. So Michael Amemar, Ibai Zemer Rav Huna Hava Levi Shtadev. So the Gemara suggests as follows. Maybe Rav Huna did in fact have money at one point historically, meaning when he got married, he got money. He had money, and so therefore now the cosigner who's cosigning really is serving as a real guarantor. Or you could also say that, look, generally speaking, a guarantor who's cosigning on a ksuva document, the truth of the matter is that under normal circumstances, he's not really financially committing himself. But when it comes to the father who wants to get his son married, and I'll also add, is a mitzvah to get his son married. So for him, it's a real commitment. It's a real financial commitment when he's co-signing on the ksuva. De'idmar, now the Gemara is going to spell out all the levels of guarantor and their financial and their financial obligation. Arev de ksuva divra kolam ishtabed. If I have a standard arev of ksuva, there's no shibud. There's no real financial commitment. You are not going to be able to be a second line of defense in terms of recovery. Because again, the Gemara is going to spell this out. Because you're just there to promote the mitzvah of marriage. And you're not causing a loss. Now, there could be a potential disaster in the event of death or divorce, where now she's looking to get a ksuva. But right now, your real intention is, I just want the two of them to get married.
So there's no need for a shvua there.
Well, hold on a second. We'll come back to that. Kablan de balchov divrei hakol mishtabed. Now, if you become a super guarantor on a standard loan, so obviously now that means that you are going to be financially on the hook in the event of the primary borrower being unable to pay back the loan. So now they are going to go after you, and rightfully so. Now, mishtabed arev, I'm sorry, divrei hakol mishtabed. Arev de bachov v'kablan de ksuva. Now, if we have an arev of a bachov, and we have a kablan of a ksuva pligi, so here we have a debate. Now, some are of the opinion that the co-signer is only going to be financially liable only if at the time the borrower himself had money. He had means. So that means to say that the co-signer was there as a second line of defense. However, now, some say that even if the original borrower had no money, still the cosigner is actually there and is going to be really financially liable and obligated. So the Gemara says, now, with all these positions, the Gemara arrives at a sound conclusion. Under all circumstances, almost all circumstances, so if you have a person who's co-signing on a loan, he's going to be mishtabed. That creates a real firm financial commitment where he is now going to be the second signer on the loan. And if the original, if the primary cannot pay back the loan, so then rightfully the lender can go after the second, after the co-signer, after the guarantor. With one notable exception, labar me arev diksuva. Except for a guarantor of iksuva, da'af agav di islay lo mishtabed. And even if at the time of marriage the husband had money, so now the co-signer now is secure in knowing that he's not doing so just out of ridiculousness, but there really is money to the husband, and I'm really now potentially going to be liable as well. So even under those circumstances, somebody who is a guarantor on a ksuva is not really financially committing himself. My time is, so what is he doing? Mitzvah ka'avid v'lo midi chasra. He's just doing a mitzvah, and he's not causing her a loss.
What's the mitzvah?
The mitzvah's marriage.
He's
in other words, he's
guaranteeing what?
He's not guaranteeing. It's exactly the point. He's not guaranteeing.
What he's doing is he's encouraging.
He's encouraging two people to get married. So he's facilitating. He's facilitating.
It could be to a lie. He's not guaranteeing it. He's lying.
I understand. I'm not disputing with what you're saying, but I'm just simply saying that it's understood contextually that he's just simply encouraging the marriage to occur. And on top of that, consider that marriages, I understand marriages end in divorce, marriages end in death, I understand that, but currently right now, the ksuva is just there as a means of giving her a sound state of mind. In other words, the marriage does not currently represent a loss to her. It is not, the note of the ksuva is a note of indebtedness only in the event of death or divorce. But it doesn't have to end that way. In other words, the marriage could be successful. You never know.
He's got to be really
successful. Right. A man was divorcing his wife and... Sorry, let's go in the right order. There was a man who was selling his property and kagarshal divasayu and divorced his wife. So shachar rev yosef b'rei derev l'kamei derev papa arev tanan. Look, I know the circumstances where we're worried about some sort of collusion. If let's say you have a guarantor of iksuva, which as we just learned, an arev kablan does in fact guarantee the loan. The father does in fact guarantee the loan. Under normal circumstances, does not. But there are occasions where the guarantor of iksuva is financially obligated. And we're worried about collusion. And so therefore, neder is required. And hektish tanan. And we also know that in the case of hektish, we're worried about collusion, according to Rebbe Lazar. And therefore, neder is required. Lokech mahu. What about just a simple buyer? Right? In other words, we have now a person who... bought the property from the husband, and now he's divorcing his wife. Or we worried maybe about some sort of collusion. And so therefore, is a neder required? So Amar Lei, Tana Be Ruchla, I'm sorry, Tana Ki Ruchla Nechshav Enezel. So his response is, I don't understand, what do you want? What do you want from the Tana? You want the Tana to go over every single case, meaning the Tana is going to give us an assortment of cases, and then we have a brain, Baruch Hashem, and we'll figure out the rest. And the Tana is not like a peddler, where the peddler now is asking, what are you selling? So I'll give you a selection of what I'm selling. I'll explain to you a selection, and I'm not going to go over every single thing. Okay. So in other words, under all circumstances, we are concerned that a collusion is going to occur, and a neder is therefore required. Now, Nardai Amar did not, nan delot, nan lo tanan. Now, Hardai, the yeshiva Nardai, totally disagrees. The cases where when a man divorces his wife and we're worried about collusion, and a neder is required is in the cases outlined in the Mishnah. And that's it. In the case of Hektish. In the case of an Arev. So there, we are looking to protect Hektish. We're looking to protect the Arev. But if it's just Tom, a regular buyer...
In terms of the house, but doesn't it still have an option within 2 years to buy it back anyway? So it's like he's
getting it. We're not talking about redemption. We're talking about mortgaged property. She has a mortgage against the property. She is going to recover it based on a mortgage. And so, according to the yeshiva of Nahardai, that's not included. We're not worried about collusion under such circumstances. Now, it's really interesting because basically, if you think about it, meaning every time a woman gets married, so she has a ksuva, which means that she has now a mortgage against his property. And so...
She's the first in line? She sells
everything because I have nothing to pay her. She'll be the first in line ahead of any creditor that comes after her. If there are creditors that come before her, so then she's behind those creditors. In other words, she's like any other note holder.
It also is a misgradation of his different properties.
That's a fair point. That's a very fair point. So but in other words, she's a note holder. So it's really interesting because effectively what the Gemara is saying is, do I have to worry about collusion when I have anyone who has a mortgage against the property, and specifically that of a wife? And Tosfos himself says, like this discussion in the Gemara, it's really a strange discussion. Tema, if you take a look at the top Tosfos, Tema the Rebbe, v'chilo yadu shebechol hashas the isha govik suvasam el kuchos, meaning this is a standard procedure that a woman has a lien against her husband's property. And what is the Gemara even entertaining over here? This idea that we're worried about collusion and therefore she shouldn't be able to collect from the lekuchos, it's like, it's a really strange discussion. And Tosu suggests, v'shem yeshlam shemachar nechasa v'girsha miyad. Tosu says, I'll tell you, it looks suspicious. Why? Because here's what happened. He sold the property, and then just a short couple days later, they get a divorce. Oh. So under those circumstances, like, that's a little bit fishy. Meaning selling property and then divorcing immediately afterwards. Right now all the alarm bells are going off. Like, oh, that divorce isn't a real divorce. That divorce is just there to recover the property, right? So Tosfos is suggesting maybe under those circumstances, that's our discussion in our Gemara. The lekach ha'yachoshesh mishum kunyun yavali maya hamecher kodem harbe min agerishin shegir shel achar zman lo hainu choshesh min akununya. But Tosfos points out, but if it looks like, if everything looks normal, meaning he sold the property, because that's what people do. People sell properties. And then a divorce occurs sometime later, so we're not, the Gemara is not entertaining such a scenario, meaning that the whole purpose of the divorce over there isn't just to collude and to be able to recover a property that he sold years earlier. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. So the Amar of Mishar Shemai Tam Danarda Bishlam Hektish Mishom Revach De Hektish Arev Nami Mitzvah Huda Aved. So look, in the case of Hektish and in the case of Arev, so we can understand why it is that we are concerned about protecting these people. In other words, by Hektish, we're looking to preserve Hektish, meaning, look, we want to do even a more vigilant job of preserving Hektish. And so therefore, even under normal circumstances, we're not worried about collusion, but for Hektish, we're worried. And for an Arev, we want to protect the Arev, especially, considering the case of an Arev Ksuva, where he's looking to guarantee a Ksuva, where there again, he's not really looking to financially commit himself, he's just there for the purposes of ensuring these two people get married. V'lav midi chasrei. Elokeach michti midi yada dechocha v'chadika leksuva. My name is of an isben ihu who dafsin anafshei. But if you're talking about a purchaser, so look, update. When you're purchasing property and there's a lien against that property, so now buyer beware. Meaning you know that there's a lien on the property. And if this man is married, there's a lien on the property. That's married men have wives with ksuvas. And so there's a lien on the property. So every time you buy a property with a lien on it, so now, of course, you should have known better. And you should have known that there was a lien on such a property. And so now you can't claim later at a later point in time, oh my gosh, she got divorced and now she's exercising her lien and taking the property away from me. Who saw that coming? The answer is you should have seen that coming. And so the Gemara says, no, we're not going to afford any extra layers of levels of protection in order to protect the buyer who's buying a property. Okay. Hamakdish nechasov ha'isa alav ksuvas isha. Now, previously, in the previous Mishnah, we discussed a person who was makdish as nechasim, and he had a ksuva, and what happens now in the event that he divorces his wife? Are we worried about collusion? Okay. He divorces his wife, and now she has a lien on the property, and she wants to exercise that lien. But basically what she's doing now, she's taking the property away from Hektish. But she has a right to do so, because she has a lien on that property. But at the same time, however, property now has just been taken away from Hektish. So what do we say under those circumstances? The Mishnah tells us, Hamakdish nechasov ha'isa alav ksuvas isha, ubachov, or it doesn't even have to be the case of the wife. It could be any creditor who's got a lien on the property. Eina isha yechol legavus ksuvas amin hektish, v'lo bachovus chovo, ela hapode amanas liten li'isha b'ksuvasa, ubachovus chovo. So there has to be a pigeon, there has to be a redemption. Now I know what you're wondering. If there's going to be a redemption, so that means to say that someone's going to be paying now for this property to leave Hektish in order so that a person can exercise his lien, meaning the whole point over here is that because he has a lien on that property, so that means that the Makdish, the one who was Makdish the property, did not really have a right to hand it over to Hektish. He's exercising the lien, he meaning the wife who got divorced, or the creditor who now wants to collect the loan. So that means that because they had a lien on that property, it means basically the property belonged to them. What does that mean? You're redeeming it from Hektish. So we're going to learn together in the Gemara. The Gemara will say very succinctly that, look, on one hand, everything I said is absolutely correct. A woman is entitled to that property because she has a lien on that property. A creditor is entitled to that property because he has a lien on that property. On the other hand, look at the optics. We are now having a property moving from Hektish to somebody else's domain, and there was no pigeon. So because of the optics, the Chachamim were therefore concerned. The Chachamim said, you know what? Let's put out a nominal pigeon. It's going to be just a token amount in order so that people will not say, hey, property just left Hektish with no pigeon. That's what the Mishnah means. By the way, I'm explaining the Gemara like Rashi. I'm explaining the Mishnah like Rashi. Hektish tishimana v'haya chova me'amanem. So let's say, for example, the property was valued at 90 and the obligation was 100. So so that means to say that you're going to recover the property. Now, the property doesn't even satisfy the whole loan, right? Right. The loan to value was 90%. Okay, but still. So v'hayachova me'amana, mosif od dinar upode esenechasim. So again, so now that you're going to be recovering the entire property, and it's not even going to satisfy the whole loan, but it doesn't matter, meaning you recover the whole property. But what you'll do is you'll give a token amount so that people will not walk.
Delay was 110%.
Right? Huh? Okay, I'm sorry. You're right. Thank you for the correction. You're right. So most of Odinar Podas Nechasim Ha'il Amanasli Tain Leisha Ksuva Labachov Es Chovo. Now Laman Lamemar Poda Poda Mishum De Rabbi Abba Odam Rabbi Abba Shalom Yomer Hekta Shotze Below Pigeon. Okay. And so, like I explained, but I only got it from the Gemara, and that is that we don't want people to say that that property just leaves without a pigeon. Therefore, you give a nominal amount to redeem it. But again, the wife who's exercising her lien on the property, or the creditor is exercising his lien on the property, they are going to be able to recover it from Hekdesh. Now, Masitzin Delo Kershim Gamliel, the Tanya Shem Gamliel, Omri, Imhaya Chova Kenegde Hekdesho, Podo, V'im Lav, Eino Poda. Now, Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the following position. He says that if the value of the property is anything less than the value of the loan, the property never served to secure the loan. Shimon Gamliel has a really interesting position, which we're going to see is not accepted, but that is that you security of a property against a loan is only when it matches the loan. Anything less than that, and so the understanding between the lender and the borrower, and if presumably also he would say the same thing regarding a woman getting married as well. That part's not super clear, but the let's say the relation, the lender and the borrower understand that because this property doesn't match the loan, it therefore doesn't secure at all. Okay, that's the opinion of Rishim Gamliel. The Chachamim disagree, obviously, meaning our Mishnah is a clear illustration of that. The Chachamim say that even if the value of the property is less than the loan value, it's still theirs to secure the loan. But there's got to come a point in time where even the Chachamim would agree to the idea of Rishim Gamliel. V'rabbanan ad kama, that's the Gemara's next question. At what point do the Chachamim concede the point that that property can no way secure that loan? So Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Sheshet Apaga, 50 cents on the dollar. If the value of the property is 50% of the loan amount, so anything from 50 and above, so that's going to secure the loan. Anything below 50% is not going to secure the loan. And presumably, what's behind the idea of the Chachamim, meaning that's, Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, in the name of Rav Sheshes, what his idea is that basically, look, obviously we know that there is fluctuation in property. And so, even though the property itself is not at the full value of the loan, but, you know, people overpay for property. Basically, how much do people overpay for property? So this is an idea that keeps coming up throughout the Gemara, and that is basically people will pay two times the value of property, right? Under obviously extenuating circumstances, but that's how far people will go. So over here now, if the property represents 50% of the loan, so at least now we can construct an argument to say that this property now is actually there to secure the loan. Because I understand it's 50% of the loan, but people will overpay for a property up to two times its amount. However, once the property is less than 50% of the loan, so then there's a basic understanding that there's no way that this property is there to secure that loan. And at that point in time, even the Chachamim would concede. Okay, let's stop over here. Let's just quickly recap.
What's the minimum that they have to pay for to redeem the?
It's the Gemara just simply says a dinar. In other words, it's just a nominal amount. Okay, it's a token payment. We start off this morning with persons being machish nechasav, our concern of collusion and our interest in protecting Hekdesh from any type of collusion. Therefore, a neder is being made. Machlok tshin Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua whether such a neder is being made. However, the Mishnah concedes that if you are a guarantor of a ksuva, so there. There we are looking to protect the Arev, and so therefore a neder is to be made. The Gemara's discussion is how to explain Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua. The Gemara gave us two ways to understand the machlokes between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua. The Gemara in the bottom of the Amud Aleph of today's Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph brings in the episode of Moshe Bar Atzri, who was the guarantor for his son Rav Huna, and the question of whether or not we could advise him to use this kind of collusion in order to try to get the property of his father. And Abai and Rava debate the issue from a legal standpoint, from an ethical standpoint. The Gemara on the Amud Beis today goes over the various levels of being an Arev. There's a standard Arev, there's an Arev Kablan, a super Arev, and the levels of commitment of the Arev, the Gemara's conclusion, all guarantors are going to be financially obligated to pay the loan in the event that the primary borrower defaults on the loan. The notable exception is going to be that person who is going to be guaranteeing a ksuva. He's doing so only to encourage marriage and not really to financially commit himself. The question of whether or not we need to make protections, these kinds of layers of protections for a buyer of a property, meaning we know we want to protect Hekdesh, we know we want to protect the Narev, do we also want to protect the buyer as well? And according to the Yeshiva of Nardai, no, we're not going to protect the buyer. In other words, buyer beware. When you're buying a property from a married man, there's a lien on that property, right? You know that, and you should make your own protections. The Chachamim are not going to give extra layers of protection for such a buyer. And finally, our Mishnah ends off with, when in fact a lien holder is exercising their lien on a property that belongs to Hekdesh, so on one hand, they're totally within the right to take it from Hekdesh, the question only remains, what about the perception of you taking something away from Hekdesh? So the Mishnah says, so give a token amount to Hekdesh so that there's no, even though you're within your right, but give a token amount so that it doesn't look like you're just simply taking away from Hekdesh. And the final discussion we had today was, how much does a property value have to be relative to the loan in order for that property to secure the loan? Shim Gamliel says, 1-to-1. The land has to be at least the equal value of the loan, otherwise it doesn't secure the loan. The Chachamim say no, that the land could be significantly less than the actual loan, up to 50% of the value of the loan, then it's securing the loan. Anything less than that, and it does not secure the loan.